Today we'll be discussing a manuscript in the Journal of Applied Physiology titled Preliminary Evidence of Reductive Stress in Human Cytotoxic T Cells Following Exercise from the laboratory of Dr. Stephen Coles. We have the lead author, Dr. Alex Wadley, representing the authors, and Dr. Deborah Dolson, who is an expert in the field. My name is Simon Schenk, and I am the associate editor that handled the review process. I will be moderating today's discussion. Dr. Wadley, please provide us with a brief overview of the rationale and aims for your study, how you tested the hypothesis, and the primary findings from your study.
So the overarching aim of our study was to validate an experimental platform to monitor a redox state of an immune cells before and after exercise using flow cytometry. This is based on a large body of evidence that has shown that humans are susceptible to acute oxidative stress following exercise, and this has been demonstrated in immune cells previously. A lot of the work has been fairly descriptive in nature, but there is some recent work to suggest that the mobilization pattern of immune cells and also their function might be influenced by their redox state. But these studies haven't taken into account the fact that immune cells are a very heterogeneous population of cells. So we sought to advance this by developing a flow cytometry technique so that we could phenotypically assess immune cells in response to exercise with regards to their redox state. And we did this by incorporating the FAST-specific probe fluorescein 5-maleimide into our flow cytometry panels. So fluorescein 5-maleimide is a cell-permeable probe that can bind to the functional thiol group of a cysteine amino acid. And cysteine thiols are contained within numerous proteins within the cell, be it signaling proteins or abundant antioxidant proteins that enable the redox buffering capacity of the cell. So the fluorescein 5-maleimide binds to the thiol when it's in its reduced form, so before it has been oxidized. So more binding of our fluorescein 5-maleimide probe indicates higher levels of reductive capacity within the cell, and less binding of fluorescein 5-maleimide is indicative of oxidative stress. We first validated our assay in vitro by exposing a JerCat T cell line to physiological doses of hydrogen peroxide. And we showed that over a 4-hour time course, a steady loss in fluorescein 5-maleimide signal. But one thing we found really interesting in our findings, and we showed this in a series of other cell lines, was that at 1 hour following the oxidant stress, we saw more binding of our fluorescein 5-maleimide probe, which was indicative of reductive stress. So this led us to hypothesise that in humans, where when they're exercising and exposed to high levels of oxidants, do certain populations of immune cells experience reductive stress in response to exercise. We sought to test this hypothesis by recruiting 20 individuals to our lab, and they undertook a VO2 max test. We isolated PBMCs before and after exercise, and then phenotypically assessed their redox state pre and post exercise. And the findings from the study were that we identified that CD8 T cells, so cytotoxic T cells, become reductive in response to an acute VO2 max test, and that this response is lost 15 minutes following exercise. We then attempted to phenotypically characterize this population of cells more specifically, and showed that they express less of the chemokine receptor CCR7. So CCR7 is a receptor that sends T cells back to primary lymph nodes. So less expression of this CCR7 indicates that potentially this reductive population of cells may be migrating to secondary lymph nodes or sites of inflammation post-exercise, indicating that potentially the reductive stress is of functional significance in the immune response to exercise.
Thank you, Dr. Wadley. Dr. Dolson, as an expert in this field, what is your perspective on this paper?
I found this to be a very interesting, a very novel study. And what Dr. Wadley's already explained is that the researchers were able to take an already used probe and manipulate it and then validate it for use in flow cytometry. And in my opinion, this has kind of opened up the field of research within exercise immunology. Up until this point, we knew very little in terms of reductive stress, but what the research researchers have now allowed us to do is open up the field to investigate this in much more detail. And so what I particularly liked in the study is not only was it a very robust methodological approach and validated this new and rather exciting approach for exercise immunologists to use, but then they went one step further and actually tested their method. And this again has kind of opened up and given preliminary results in terms of immune cells do actually appear to have this transient reductive stress. And And the other thing that I thought was really novel and is very interesting, it's come out in some other exercise immunology studies, is this idea that, because obviously the study looked at not only recreationally active participants, but also trained participants, one of the major findings of the study was that there appears to be a difference in how individuals respond to exercise in terms of reductive stress. And it appeared that your training level, the more highly trained athletes, if you like, seemed to not have as great a response when it came to reductive stress. And it was actually recreationally active individuals that showed this big spike in concentration of numbers. So I think it is a very interesting and quite exciting area that's just opened up for us. Not only have we now got a validated and usable method with flow cytometry that allows us to determine reductive stress, but it's also now pointed out some kind of potential areas that we can start to focus in a little bit more and follow that train of thought in terms of, are there differences with your training status? So yeah, there's exciting times ahead, I think.
Thank you, Dr. Dawson. Dr. Wadley, please comment on the subjects that were studied and its relevance of your work to the general population.
So the individuals we recruited for this study were from the Worcestershire area, where the university is based, and was a mixture of staff, students, and for the train group, individuals from local amateur triathlon, cycling and running clubs. The individuals we recruited were all male, average age of late 20s. So quite a niche group of individuals that we were recruiting to this study. In terms of advancing this, not only looking at different types of exercises we've already mentioned, but also looking at different individuals is definitely something we need to do. In terms of the immune response to exercise, there's evidence to suggest that the mobilization of immune cells is different depending on factors such as age and also sex. In terms of the numbers of cells, but also the composition of cells. So Ricky Simpson in Texas has nicely shown that the phenotype of the cells, fit cells like CD8 T cells, are different in older individuals compared to younger individuals in the sense that more senescent cells are mobilized in response to exercise. These factors need to be considered moving forward. And we have a collaboration with Napier University at the moment who are looking at applying our assay in older adults and also looking at Ironman triathletes as well.
One thing that I think's interesting alongside most of the things that we've been discussing is a few researchers probably a couple of years ago now, again, have suggested that while we're looking at redox states, at the moment, the research to date has generally looked at the overall means of these populations. And while that's great to do, it often is a little misleading. And I think the thing that we also should be trying to incorporate within our future studies is looking at individual responses, especially in the immune system where everyone has such a different response. And we see this more and more, the more research that I'm doing over the years, the difference in individual responses is quite apparent. So I think what would be nice in some of these studies is looking at the individual responses for people as well. In some of the responses we expect to see an increase in oxidative stress, actually some people aren't showing those responses or showing no change in stress response. So I think it's something that we just need to be aware of and make sure that we report that so that we get a better understanding, not just in terms of group means, but in terms of individual responses as well.
I think that's a very interesting and excellent point regarding the individual responses to exercise. Dr. Wally, do you have a comment on how this relates to your work?
One of the papers that we used as premise for our study was a review of the literature from a group in Greece that looked at extracellular markers of oxidative stress and how they varied in response to exercise. And they specifically focus on individual differences, showing that some individuals do show an increase in oxidative stress following exercise and others show no response and some show a response in the complete opposite direction. And by large, and I think Dr. Dawson said this, this has generally been ignored in just reporting mean trends. And when I read that paper, I found it really interesting. I think this was 2015. I think the paper came out maybe 2016. And whilst I question whether an extracellular marker of oxidative stress decreasing is actually reductive stress, it definitely gave us an initiative to go forward and look at it intracellularly and actually determine, as we have done, that some individuals do experience reductive stress following exercise.
Dr. Wadley, in your study, subjects were fasted during the exercise bout. However, many people are exercising in the fed state. What are the potential implications of your work when fed versus fasted?
I think this is a really important point. Typically, in many exercise physiology studies, you see individuals fasted before trials in an attempt to control as many variables as you possibly can going into the study, and which is why we took the approach that we did for individuals to be fasted. One of the primary food sources that would be used prior to exercise would be carbohydrate, and there is some evidence to suggest that carbohydrate feeding can attenuate the redox response to exercise. This is looking at extracellular markers of oxidative stress. I've also done some work on this in the past, looking at athletes overtraining, looking at how acute and chronic markers of oxidative stress change with low carbohydrate feeding and high carbohydrate feeding, and we didn't actually show any differences in that study. But it's definitely something to consider moving forward, that someone's nutritional background generally, chronically, and also the nutrition they have prior to an individual bout could influence the response.
Dr. Dawson, would you like to add anything?
The fasted versus fed discussion is particularly interesting, especially when you look at the ultra-endurance athletes and some of the diets, anecdotally at the moment anyway, that are coming out with some of the ketogenic diets or LCHF diets, and some of the training modalities that athletes tend to use, where they will do a glycogen kind of depleting exercise at night, go to bed in a fasted state, get up the next morning and train again on low glycogen for kind of a super compensation and adaptation response. I think this is a particularly interesting area for future research, especially when we look at this particular area.
This concludes our conversation on preliminary evidence of reductive stress in human cytotoxic T cells for exercise for the Journal of Applied Physiology. Thank you for listening.